It's going to call.
Morning. I now call this remote meeting of the House Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Long.
Present.
Vice Chair Akam.
Present.
Minority Lead Swazinski. Minority Lead Swazinski. Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Bowe.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hornstein.
Present.
Representative Igo.
Igo present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Mecklund.
Present.
Representative Munson.
Munson present.
Representative Stevenson.
Present.
All right, we have a quorum. Happy Electric Vehicles Day, everybody. We have a full agenda, and we have to wrap up 5 minutes early because we have a session today. So we're going to dive right into it. And our first speaker on the agenda is Tim Sexton, Assistant Commissioner with Minnesota Department of Transportation, to give us an overview of the state of electric vehicle infrastructure in Minnesota. Welcome back to the committee, Assistant Commissioner Sexton.
Thank you, Chair Long and members. Appreciate the opportunity to join you today and share a little bit about kind of the state of electric vehicles in Minnesota as we see it from the State Department of Transportation, along with sort of future opportunities. And also for the record, my name is Tim Sexton. I serve as Assistant Commissioner for Sustainability and Public Health at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. So, I think it's important to note why some of the reasons why Minnesota is excited and looking into electric vehicles, opportunities for lower emissions and cleaner air. EVs emit less zero tailpipe emissions, and also, especially when they're charged with renewables or lower carbon electricity sources, there's a lot of opportunities for lower emissions from the power generation as well. The graph here just shows some examples of that, assuming that EVs travel around 10,000 miles per year. The other key piece here is based on the Next Generation Energy Act, the Department of Transportation is working hard to achieve the goals set out in that act, given the fact that transportation is the number one source of climate pollution in the state. So here's where we are, a little bit about where we are, at least for electric vehicles and some sales trends in recent years. So you can see here, I guess what's not shown on the graph to the left is that in 2011, there was a little less than 500 registered EVs in Minnesota. In the last 3 years, MnDOT's been working with DPS and the Pollution Control Agency to track vehicle registrations in the state. You can see the rapid growth over time, especially in the last 3 years. This represents over 200% growth since 2018. Further, that last chart showed, the last graph showed around 19,000 registered EVs in April 2021. The current dashboard that's shared on MnDOT's website shows more current registrations from December of 2021. And you can see the increase to nearly 24,000 registered EVs. They're in nearly every county in Minnesota. The blue dots here on this graphic show locations of EV charging stations. So while the network is growing, there's still opportunities to expand that further to make EVs, EV charging more convenient. But I think what the key here is that, there has been rapid growth, even though total EV registrations are still less than 1% of overall total vehicle registrations in the state. There's a little bit more different graphic to show where those EV charging stations are currently located. And you can see there are still some gaps in the network. The other thing too, just for background, if you see references to level 2 chargers, those are slower chargers that are generally used to charge overnight or say in the workplace, if somebody's at work for 8 hours, those are good, a good fix, but fast chargers, the DCFC, which stands for direct current fast charger, those are the ones that are going to be more similar to the experience you might have when you're filling up at a gas station. The idea is that when you're traveling longer distances, those are good options to charge. So what have we been doing at the state? In 2019, MnDOT, the Pollution Control Agency, and the Great Plains Institute worked together to put together a vision for the state around electric vehicles, including provide some background on market trends and analysis, but also looked at what it would take to make progress towards the Next Generation Energy Act goals for the transportation sector. And as part of that, established a goal to have 20% of light duty vehicles in Minnesota be electric by the year 2030. Building on that work, in 2021, MnDOT led a multi-agency effort to update some of the market trends, identify some potential strategies the state could undertake to expand EV use and uptake, with a focus on equity. It's really key to a number of our partners that electric vehicles support our strategies are equitable and really can be applied to all Minnesotans around the state. Other past work, or recent work, I should say, was regional coordination around electrification. So in the fall of 2021, the states of Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin signed a five-state compact, agreeing to work together to build out EV charging corridors with a focus on needs for medium and heavy duty vehicles, really with the goals of building jobs, developing an EV workforce, supporting energy independence, and promoting clean air and water. So this bipartisan compact has a task force that's been developed and is working together to help to achieve all of these goals. Also notable and very closely tied to future work that I'll discuss in a moment around the bipartisan infrastructure law, but alternative fuel corridors, the alternative fuel corridors program was created by the Federal Highway Administration about 4 years ago. And what this did was to allow states at the time to sign corridors, designating them as EV charging corridors if they had fast charging EV stations at 50-mile increments, no more than 1 mile from the interstate. And you can see here signage placed on Interstate 94 on the left, and on the right, you can see a state map that identifies the interstate alternative fuel corridors designated by the Federal Highway Administration. The lines in green are considered corridor ready, which means they are eligible for signage. The lines in orange designate corridor pending, which means that we're working towards developing that corridor, but there are not enough EV chargers to be designated as corridor ready and allow for signage. Now, this is a past program that is changing under the new bipartisan infrastructure law, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. So opportunities for funding for electric vehicle charging. The bipartisan infrastructure law provides a lot of new opportunities, technical support, and funding for EV charging. $5 billion were designated to states as part of formula funding, which means funds are dedicated on the basis of population. So for Minnesota, the proposed apportionment is about $68 million over 5 years. It's around $10 million in the current fiscal year, increasing though to get to that full 68 by fiscal year 2026. So that does require a 20% state match or non-federal match to access those funds. It also requires development of a statewide plan before any of the funds can be used. Those plans are due by August 1st. Otherwise, there's the potential that federal highways would withhold funding or redistribute it to locals or to other states. In addition to the formula funding that's apportioned based on population, there's also a discretionary funding program around $2.5 billion. So these funds are competitive. They're also, unlike the formula funds that are designated to the state departments of transportation, these can be applied directly to USDOT or the Federal Highway Administration, by states, MPOs, local governments, and even some special districts. So this competitive program, we don't have guidance on this program just yet, how exactly it would function, but there's a lot of additional opportunities beyond the $68 million in federal formula funds for EV charging. So the formula funds, we were really excited last week that guidance was released last Thursday. So we're still have some follow-up questions on what this means, but importantly, the reason I showed the alternative fuel corridors earlier is that the guidance designates or requires states to first build out those interstate alternative fuel corridors before funds can be used in other locations, such as trunk highways around the state. The funds also must be used for EV charging only. However, that definition of EV charging includes opportunities for battery storage and on-site renewables to support the charging. So in addition to this formula funds, there's about 15 other federal transportation programs that are now allowing eligibility of those funds to be used to support EV charging, say, for example, on projects or in other transportation plans. The key here, though, is that the new guidance identifies the need for a plan by August 1st and the need to designate additional alternative fuel corridor routes. So building out the routes along the interstates as the first priority, but those designations are due in the middle of May of this year. So what does this all mean? How much is that funding going to get us? Well, first of all, if funding is authorized for the state match that would allow us to access that full $68 million in federal dollars, those funds alone could get us, you know, around 500 new fast chargers statewide. That's going to depend a little bit on the speed of the charger. Moving forward, you know, the more expensive chargers are going to recharge the vehicles faster. However, they're going to cost more. So that's going to be a balance that we're looking forward to working with local partners, local governments, tribes, MPOs, utilities, and others to sort of determine what that could look like. The other thing is that, you know, the first priority is the interstate system, which is important. I think that we're really excited about what we can do to build out the trunk highway network to make sure that Minnesotans that aren't serviced, you know, conveniently by an interstate also have access to convenient DC fast charging. So that's what we're doing first, is that we're looking to identify those designations by spring, by mid-May. And then we are also setting up a structure to coordinate with local governments and others to work together to develop that plan that's due by August. So that's all I had today. Happy to take any questions if time allows.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Sexton. I know your time is limited this morning, so we'll take a few quick questions before we move on. I just had one question for you. So if we fully fund and match from the state the federal infrastructure spending and do that full build out, does that meet 100% of our charging needs in the state?
Chair Long, that's a great question. That's one of the questions we're hoping to answer through the planning process that's due by August 1st. It would definitely go a long way towards building out that full network. I think there's still some questions though around what that full network really needs to look like, given the changing needs and expectations around the speed of chargers and also kind of where and how people are using them. As a reminder, around 80%, it's estimated that around 80% of charging happens at home. So the whole model of how people use public charging is different than the fuel stations. And so we're hoping that would answer some of those questions in the planning process.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the Assistant Commissioner, on page three of your slides, you kind of went through the progression of vehicle registration. I think it started a couple of years ago, ended in 21. I believe there was 19,000. On what percentage of those 19,000 are government registrations?
Assistant Commissioner Sexton.
Yeah, Chair Long and Representative Swazinski. That's a great question. It's a very small percent, but I can follow up with more specifics if you'd like.
And then second question. Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Just from a profitability standpoint, you know, if we look at the infrastructure for current fueling systems for our transportation, those are to a vast majority privately funded. What is the profitability marker, or why do they feel like this is an unprofitable venture for private entities to move forward with these charging stations? You know, essentially setting up a gas station model EV charging station rather than just government subsidize these locations.
Assistant Commissioner Sexton.
Yeah, Chair Long and Representative, that's a great question. I think maybe perhaps some of the other testifiers could provide more information about the profitability. I can share briefly though, what we've heard is that at the moment, the EV transition is happening quickly, but there still needs to be more EVs on the road to make these more consistently profitable. The other piece though is that we're hearing from some site hosts is that, you know, it's people are thinking differently about the profitability of the charging. In some ways similar to a convenience store that's located, you know, that's connected to fuel pumps, in that, you know, it gets people in the door of their business. And so that's creating sort of secondary profits. So it's a different model, but I guess I would defer to others in terms of more specifics on profitability.
Maybe we can address that question to the other testifiers when they come. Representative Hornstein, and then we're going to have to keep going, and we'll come back for questions after those, the next testifiers. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner Sexton. I really appreciate this work you're doing and support it strongly. I actually think that Representative Swedzinski asked mostly my question, but there's a small part that I'd like you to address. And I have heard a lot from colleagues and others about the need to develop public-private partnerships as it relates to EV infrastructure. And that was one of the bullet points that you had in one of your slides. So beyond perhaps maybe that convenience store model that you mentioned, could you maybe share with us what a public-private partnership as it relates to EV charging might look like?
Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Hornstein. So I think this is something, first of all, this is something that we're looking to explore with our plan, and it's going to be really important that we're working with partners to understand how they're thinking about these public-private partnerships. One image that was on an earlier slide showed a Target, for example, that could serve as a site host, you know, as being that they host the chargers that are located there. So there's a partnership with the site hosts. There's also potential for partnerships with utilities. Depending on how the charging works, what we've heard is that there's potential benefits to utilities to reduce rates overall through EV charging. So I think those are two key partners, is who's going to be hosting the site or the chargers, and then also utilities, which have a really important role, not just the investor-owned big utilities, but also rural electric co-ops and others, which, again, other testifiers will speak to. But I think that's what we're really excited about. The other key piece here is the new federal infrastructure funding. It does allow and I'll say encourage that the funds are used to support private vendors. So this isn't something in general, but the state is looking to own and operate. So this is meant to support the private sector in building these out and developing sustainable public-private partnerships, but profitable models in the future.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for that answer. And I think that is going to be an important piece moving forward as we put together the matching funds for the federal money. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. We have four speakers with us this morning who are going to help dig in a little deeper to the state of the EV market, and then we'll take another round of questions for them. And first, we have Jukka Kukkonen. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Kukkonen.
Thank you, Chair Long and representatives. I'll share my screen here. Okay. So I'll talk with you about the automotive and EV market trends. My name is Jukka Kukkonen. I'm a chief EV educator and strategist for Shift to Electric, and I also teach EV market and at the University of St. Thomas. So U.S. sales of EVs doubled last year from 2.1% to 4.1%. So that and there, the Tesla is a clear market leader. With as you can see from the numbers, they are really selling well. Again, they have the best production capacity. What we are seeing with other manufacturers is that they are increasing their production capacity, and this will change the market. And I'll share about information about that and explain why it is important for us to get ready here for this market growth and make good decisions based on that. One easy thing for us to look at is what happens in Europe right now. The auto manufacturers started to ramp up their production in 2020, and you can see the market just took off there. So we can see similar kind of strong growth here in the U.S. in coming years, because underlying demand is in the market. It's very clear to see from the trend lines. We often hear that maybe EVs work well in California, but maybe not so well in Minnesota. But here's an example from my country of origin, Finland, where in 2017 they were in the same situation as us, couple percentage points of EV market share. Right now they are over 30%. And Finland is colder than Minnesota. They have less spartly less people living in a bigger area, so they actually drive a lot there too. So there's no difference, and it's not going to be a challenge for Minnesota in that perspective. We had quite a bit of vehicles coming into market in 2021. Good portion of them came into the crossover sector, which is by far the biggest sector of U.S. Automotive sales nowadays. About 45% of the market is crossovers. If you want to look at what are the vehicles that are available in the U.S., EVs, you can go to evinfolist.com and download Midwest EV Infolist or US EV Infolist. We keep those up to date all the time. We are expecting quite a bit of new models coming to the market this year. So you can see again most of those coming in the crossover part of the market. But what is important for us is that we are seeing many pickup trucks coming in the market. And that's going to change the perception in Minnesota by those who haven't really understood the EV market yet. I'll next talk about five biggest auto manufacturers in the US. We used to talk about big three in the past. Nowadays, we'll have to talk about big five, and that tells you also how the market has changed. And we're talking about these in order of market capitalization. So Tesla is by far the biggest automotive manufacturer in the U.S. and in the world, with the market capitalization of $926 billion this morning. They're also clear market leader with battery electric vehicles, 70% of the market share in the U.S. And their sales growth was last year 65%. And if you compare that to the U.S., general market growth on vehicle market was 3.3%. So there's a big difference. They sold more vehicles in the U.S. in Q3 of last year than Volkswagen or BMW. They delivered over 900,000 vehicles globally in 2021, and they're increasing their capacity of production really rapidly. They hired over 30,000 or close to 30,000 employees last year, and they are opening two manufacturing plants, one in Berlin and one in Austin, and this will double their production capacity for the U.S. market. And they need that because they have 1.3 million Cybertruck reservation holders already. So when they start to have the Giga Berlin bring those up, there's no short problem in selling them. But again, shows how quickly the market can change. GM is the second biggest with $72 billion US dollar market capitalization. In January 25, they said that they'll be investing $7 billion into the market to become a leader in the EV industry. Their target is to deliver 400,000 EVs in North America in this year and next year. By 2025, they should have a capacity of EV production of over 1 million units. And they're also building cell manufacturing, so battery manufacturing. And that $7 billion investment was the largest in their history. Ford is the third biggest of all the manufacturers in the US with market capitalization of $71 billion US dollars. Jim Farley, their president and CEO, said beginning of this month that we are well on our way to achieve at least 40% mix of battery electric vehicles by 2030 with strong margins. And in the past 6 months, we doubled our 2023 planned capacity for EVs to 600,000 units a year. And they need that because they have already 200,000 F-150 Lightning reservations. They stopped taking reservations in December. We have dealers in Minnesota who have dozens of reservations for that, and they are starting to get the first people up, able to order those, and delivery start Q2 this year. The fourth biggest U.S. Manufacturer is Rivian, market capitalization of $59 billion U.S. dollars. They have 71,000 pre-orders for R1T and R1S models. They have their first plant in Normal, Illinois. They are building a new one in Georgia, and their capacity target before the end of the decade, 1 million vehicles per year on market. And then Stellantis is the fifth biggest with Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram brands in the U.S. They're expecting by 2030, their plug-in hybrids and pure electric vehicles account for 70% of their sales in Europe and 40% in North America. Last year, they bought Jeep Wrangler 4xe in the market. It became best-selling plug-in hybrid in the U.S. This year, they are extending that to Grand Cherokee lineup. And electric Ram pickup is coming in 2024, and Chrysler will be all electric in 2028. So that's how we can see how quickly the market is changing, what kind of new things are coming. So those were my slides.
Thank you so much. Next, we will be hearing from Brendan Jordan, the Vice President with Drive Electric Minnesota. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brendan Jordan, and I serve as a facilitator for Drive Electric Minnesota. Members of the committee, a large shift is underway in our transportation system. You've just heard from Mr. Kukkonen the range of large investments being made by our vehicle manufacturers. Change is occurring, and it is an important time for our state to work together and embrace this opportunity to make sure that it benefits us. Whether Minnesota benefits will largely depend on whether we can come together as a state and develop policy that attracts new investment and maximizes the benefit for our citizens. We will be in competition with other states for new investments and jobs. There is a huge economic upside for us. We currently have at least four manufacturers involved in our state producing various types of electric vehicles. We have a large opportunity for battery material production, given our natural resources, and we have a large new opportunity for electric vehicle charging investment. We do have EV charging companies active in our state, some based in our state. EVs represent a large opportunity, not just for fuel customers who can save money on fuel and maintenance, but for utility customers who can benefit from proactive policy that thoughtfully integrates electric vehicle charging into our utility system to put a downward pressure on rates and benefit all customers, whether they choose to buy an electric vehicle or don't. A number of studies have demonstrated that thoughtful electric vehicle programs by utilities can offer much greater economic benefit for customers in that way. Again, we are in competition with other states. We are seeing many states put in place a variety of policies, and Drive Electric Minnesota feels that a comprehensive approach is needed. We do know what works. We do know what succeeds in driving adoption and driving investment. That includes policies to support adoption, policies that shape utility investments to maximize benefits for utility customers, policies that support infrastructure investment, and policies that support workforce development, jobs, and manufacturing. I want to thank the members of the committee. There are some terrific proposals that you'll be hearing today, many bipartisan proposals, in fact. The members of Drive Electric Minnesota urge bipartisan collaboration to really seize this large economic opportunity and opportunity for the people of Minnesota. One final point, you do have a handout in your packets from Drive Electric Minnesota. At the top of that handout, you can see the members who have signed on to a comprehensive strategy for embracing, excuse me, this economic opportunity. This is a membership that you know, looks that is involved throughout the state of Minnesota. This is not just for certain Minnesotans. This is rural and urban and everywhere in between. And we would be glad to work with anyone on this committee to seize this opportunity. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Next, we'll hear from Andy Snope with IBEW 292. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Snope.
Thank you, Chair Long and members of the Climate and Energy Committee for allowing me to testify and to give a jobs perspective today. My name is Andy Snope. I represent the members of IBEW Local 292. The electrical workers. Our members perform work installing and maintaining energy systems all over the state of Minnesota. The installation of solar systems, energy efficiency, and electric vehicle infrastructure have benefited our members. There is a transition to cleaner energy, and IBEW Local 292 members continue to provide the skilled, trained workforce to help with the transition to more energy efficiency, cleaner energy, and electric vehicle infrastructure. When you think about the clean energy, think highly skilled, high wage, high benefited careers installing electrical vehicle charging infrastructure and other alternative energy jobs. These bills here today will help create jobs in the electrical industry. An efficient, reliable electric vehicle infrastructure is needed in Minnesota. The bills discussed here today help to provide that blueprint to get the job done, to ease the range anxiety currently felt by electric vehicle owners that drive across and throughout the state. IBEW members across the state are ready to get the work done. This is another opportunity to couple alternative energy electrification with the creation of energy-related careers. With each one of these electric vehicle bills before you, I want to encourage you to consider adding provisions to require area labor standard wage and benefits, as well as protecting the high standards of licensing, supervision ratios, and regulation we expect for a safe installation here in Minnesota. The IBEW provides training to electrical workers, not only for our state's electrical laws and rules, but we also instruct workers specifically with the additional skills needed to install, operate, and maintain EV chargers. Through our Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Training Program, or EVITP, IBEW electrical workers and the contractors we work for are ready to get the work done on electric vehicle infrastructure for Minnesotans. Thank you, Chair Long, and I'm happy to answer questions later.
Thank you so much, Mr. Snow. And our final presenter for this portion will be Megan Hoy, who is with ZEF Electric. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. I'm going to share some slides. Just give me 1 second. All right, good morning. Let's see here. Apologies. Let me just undo that. I'm going to skip the slides. We'll go right to this. Tight on time. Good morning, Chair Long, Vice Chair Combe, and members of the committee. Thank you for the invitation to speak to you today. I'm Megan Hoy, VP of Business Development and Policy at ZEF Energy, and I'm here to speak to the growth environment that we are seeing today in the EV and EV charging industry. Founded in 2014, ZEF Energy is a smart EV charging solutions company based out of Minneapolis. While a young company, we have a tenure that is similar to some of the longest players in the industry. Today, ZEF Energy is a vertically integrated company designing and making our own smart chargers, two-way communicating devices, our own load management and networking software, as well as driver-facing interface or an app. Our products are made in the USA with production in Montevideo, Minnesota, Wausau, Wisconsin, and Auburn, California. Maintaining our US-made, Midwest-made approach is a core value for Zeph and a differentiator in the market. Zeph partners with utilities and businesses across the US and North America. Zeph Energy originated as a fast charging developer, first working on projects for Nissan and later for the US DOE. While continuing this work, we have developed a market niche working with small and mid-sized utilities, such as cooperatives and municipal utilities, which serve 57 million people across the country, or about one-fifth of the U.S. population, and cover 97% of our land base. Today, Zeph has chargers in over 30 states and is partnering with approximately 50 utilities and growing. In the last 3 years, we have watched demand for EV charging equipment and solutions accelerate rapidly. Despite notable industry supply chain challenges, in 2021, Zeph Energy's revenues were 6 times those of 2020. Why is the market exploding? Well, I think we've heard some of that already this morning, but we are seeing more vehicle types enter the market, giving drivers more choice than ever before. I'm sure you may or may not have seen or heard about the Silverado ad on the Super Bowl Sunday night amongst them. Battery ranges are up and costs are dropping. It is uncommon today to find an electric vehicle with less than 200 miles of battery range, and more vehicles have 300 to 400 plus miles of range. Within 1 to 2 years, we are expecting to see cost parity for light duty vehicles with internal combustion vehicles, and crossover vehicles and SUVs are to follow in the next 3 to 5 years. Buyers are more aware of EVs than ever. There are more EVs on the road, and a month doesn't pass without an automaker making a new announcement about plans to further invest and convert to electric vehicle production. Plus, drivers are liking the driving and owning experience. They're safe, quiet, high performing, and just plain fun to drive. I can speak with personal experience. Light duty full electric vehicle sales are more than doubled during the first half of 2021, outpacing the automotive market's overall 29% sales growth. U.S. battery electric vehicles are projected to be 25 to 30% of the new car market in 2030 and 45 to 50% by 2035. Our partners, small and mid-sized utilities, often serving suburban and rural communities across the country, have been slower to see early EV adoption. Yet, it is very important that these utilities be prepared for load growth that are starting to be seen. As was stated before, over 80% of the charging occurs at the home. EV adoption will bring the largest load growth to the electric grid since the commercialization of air conditioning. Each EV, when plugged in today, and this number is growing, is on average adding the equivalent peak load of one single family home. This is significant. These utilities need support to help them plan ahead so that this load growth is sustainable, least cost for their customers and members, with the least impact to the environment. Additionally, as EV adoption continues to accelerate, more fast charging infrastructure is needed beyond our urban centers. The fast charging of the future is not the 50 to 100 kW speed charging of the last 5 years, but 50 to 350 or even more kW or kilowatts, with more plugs to offer drivers more access and redundancy. At these charging speeds, sites can easily achieve peak demand of 1 megawatt or more. Engagement between businesses that can host these charging hubs and local utilities will be increasingly important. Yet currently, retail electric rates are not built to support these volumes of instantaneous power usage. This is a barrier to building the charging infrastructure of the future. Here, utility guidance and recommendations on rate design are needed, as well as more piloting and testing of how local or on-site renewables, energy storage, or even other innovations in the energy market can support cost-effective solutions. We look forward to continuing to work with small and medium-sized utilities as a partner to help them understand the change that is afoot and help them become EV charging experts and a resource in their communities. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hoy, and congratulations to Zeph Energy on all your great business development in the state and this important market.
Thank you.
Members, we have about 10 minutes for questions, and we'll start with Representative Gruenhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the testimony. I talked to an individual who owns a car dealership, not in my district, outside, relatively large one, about the electric cars and the mandate, he said, that's coming down, that so much of his cars that he sells, a certain percentage has to be electric. He had a number of concerns. He was less than enthusiastic, let's put it that way. And one is, he said the batteries are going to run out in terms of being viable after about 100,000 miles, or 100,000 miles or less. And it's cost prohibitive to replace those batteries. So you're going to create a huge recycle problem with these electric cars, along with the batteries having a lot of caustic materials in them, which are not environmentally friendly. So I'd like to hear a response in terms of the cost of replacing these batteries and also the environmental consequences of dealing with these batteries once they're no longer usable. Whoever it can.
Looks like Mr. Kukkonen will.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen. EVs right now have 8 years and 100,000 mile warranty on the batteries. So that's a baseline, but we can see right now the batteries lasting 12 to 15 years. The good news about the Clean Cars Minnesota rulemaking that went through last year is that that enables those dealers to actually be competitive in the future, because they will start to get cars. The only way to compete with Tesla is to be competitive in this marketplace. So that's the thing. After the batteries are have their capacity has gotten lower, let's say 15 years, they still might have 70% of their capacity left. And in that state, they still are really valuable resource. So they will go into second life either at the home storage or grid storage units. And in that use, they can easily get another 15 years. So they might have a battery life of 30 years before they need to be recycled. And then they can be recycled. There are a lot of recycling facilities already in place and more in the future. So those are highly sought after materials. So no environmental problems in that side. Replacing right now a new electric vehicle battery like top of the line Tesla battery is about $12,000, but the battery prices have come down so fast that 15 years from now, it'll not be a $12,000 anymore. Maybe it's $5,000 at that point. And that's not different from doing an overhaul for the engine of internal combustion engine car at that point if you have a 15-year-old car.
Representative Gruenhagen, did you have a brief follow-up, and then we'll have to...
The other question I had that he brought up is the Chevy Bolt is, they're being told not to charge them overnight and not to charge them in the garage because they can explode and start on fire. And the interesting thing, I have a BPOU member out here as a supporter of mine. His neighbor's son works at MIT out in Massachusetts, and they're doing battery innovation. And the problem they're running into is the closer you put the plates to gain more storage, the greater the chance it can explode. And the interesting thing here in Glencoe, a 50-year-old business plugged in their tool batteries, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, it exploded. They had a camera on it, security camera, and it burnt the whole business down to the ground. So there is the concern that when these fires start, you can't get them put out, and they shouldn't be charged overnight or in a garage. Any response to that?
Mr. Kukkonen.
Mr. Chair, the Chevy Bolt situation is such that they had, I think, like 20 to 30 battery fires for, and they have made 180,000 units of those. So Chevy has responded by recalling all of those batteries. They will be replacing all the batteries for no cost to the customers. So they are working on that, and that won't be a problem. electric vehicle fires are actually more rare than internal combustion engine vehicle fires. There has been many studies about it. Of course, it's new technology, so it's a little scary in that way, but it won't be a bigger problem than what we have with our internal combustion engine cars with gasoline tanks right now.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first off, I have a couple questions for Mr. Kukkonen. You know, I'll just start. I think the committee knows this. You know, I'm a huge supporter of what electric vehicles are going to mean to us in the future. My big thing is about making sure they're affordable for all people. We're not going to increase energy prices, and we're going to source all those minerals here. So I have a two-part question for you, Mr. Kukkonen. And the first part is, you know, let's talk about energy grid, right? So, you know, if we're going to compare Finland to Minnesota in this instance, do you know what Finland's energy grid makeup is, and, you know, how does that affect prices for Finnish people charging their cars?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representative. For all of this, we can do it smart way or we can do it dumb way. And the smart way is to really charge the cars overnight mostly. And for that, electricity capacity is available there. And I think we can hear more from the utilities about that. So that shouldn't be a problem. But again, we have to be prepared for it. And we have to make sure that there's a lot of education and right kind of infrastructure in place to support this. So I don't see it as a big problem as long as we do it well.
Okay. So, well, during the testimony, I looked up what Finland's energy grid is. 60% of it is big hydro, nuclear, and wood power. None of that is allowed in the state of Minnesota for mass energy production. And it's affordable. Finland's leading the way on that. And I applaud them for that. Those are things we should do in Minnesota. So then my second part question to that is, how many miles on average does the average Finnish person drive then compared to the average, you know, U.S. citizen or Minnesota citizen?
I'll just note we do have hydro and nuclear in Minnesota. Mr. Kukkonen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I don't know the exact comparisons between them. I just know that Finland is one-third bigger country than Minnesota is, and they have the same amount of people. So people do drive quite a bit there. My farm, for example, where I'm from, is about 200 miles from the capital, and that's a very common driving distance that you do there. There are big centers around Finland, so I think the driving patterns for the long distances are very similar to the Minnesota.
Right. So doing some research.
Representative Michael, we have three hands up and 3 minutes left, so we're going to have to keep pressing on.
Can I just be very quick here, Mr. Chair?
Make your point very quickly, and then we'll move
on. Thank you. The average commute in Finland is 23 miles, where in Minnesota it's 39. I just think we need to be cognizant of that when we're talking about comparing something apples to apples. In this case, I don't think it is. It's apples to oranges. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Mr. Kukkonen. So I agree with you that the arrival of pickups is going to just change the perception of the EV market. I'm curious if you can say more about how the performance of EV pickups compares to the performance of gas and diesel trucks on horsepower, pound feet of torque, et cetera.
Mr. Kukkonen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippert. The EVs have more power and more capacity usually than traditional vehicles. So it's not going to be an issue in that way. They are quicker. They're more powerful. Ford has, for example, said that Ford F-150 is the most, Lightning is the most powerful F-150 that they have ever built.
Thank you, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was just kind of wondering here. I'm trying to figure out what my video is. All right. So we have this committee that is dedicated to the environment. And I am just wondering, how does one justify the environmental concerns with increased lithium mining and cobalt mining? Lithium mining uses a lot of energy for the extraction from rocks, the water for extraction from the brines. And then, of course, with the cobalt mining, it is heavily reliant on child labor. And two-thirds of the cobalt supply come from the regions of the Congo, where that child labor is predominantly used. So could I mean, Mr. Chair, maybe you want to take that question on how we justify these issues that are not in our backyard, but we seem to turn a blind eye to it in order to push these green energy utopia ideas upon the citizens of Minnesota.
Sure, I appreciate the question, Representative Franzen, and appreciate your consistency in raising these issues. I'll note that there are a number of different battery chemistries that are being pursued. And for example, Tesla is looking at doing a cobalt-free battery right now and is trying to move off of cobalt altogether. These supply chain issues, as I've mentioned before in this committee, are also not unique to electric vehicles. They're true of a number of batteries, which are included in a number of our electronics, from our laptops to our cell phones. So I think this is not a limited problem just to the electric vehicle marketplace. But I think when we're looking at the health of our children, which I know is a big concern to you, I'm certainly concerned about internal combustion engines driving through our communities and neighborhoods and causing asthma and air pollution for our children here in Minnesota. And electric vehicles are going to be something that can help us move away from that and improve our health for our residents. Representative Franzen, real quick, and then we're going to have to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when you're talking about the health and well-being of the children here in Minnesota, what about the health and well-being of the children that are used to mine the material where their childhood is facing health issues due to having to work in these conditions in order to build a green utopia here? And how many more children will have to be used in mining, as well as those held against their will in places like China?
Representative Franzen, I share your concern. I think those are international and national issues that the U.S. government is looking at and that, as I mentioned, manufacturers are looking at as well. With that, members, we're going to have to move on to our five bills that we have up today for informational hearings. And first, we have House File 1668, Representative Stevenson. Would you care to remind us about your bill and any changes that we're going to see this year?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill has a number of provisions relating to the to speed the adoption of electric vehicles here in Minnesota. As the committee is well aware, not only from the testimony we've had today, but I think in a vivid illustration, if you watch the Super Bowl, I counted, you know, three or more electric vehicle advertisements. The change from internal combustion engine to electric vehicles in our market economy is happening very, very quickly. A number of leading manufacturers have indicated that they will shift more and more of their production to electric vehicles, and some, including General Motors, have indicated that they intend to phase out internal combustion engines in very short order. So the electric vehicle future is coming very quickly, and we as a state have a choice to make. Do we want to be part of that future and shape it, or do we want to be dragged into it kicking and screaming? Do we want the people of Minnesota to have the benefits of electric vehicles, or do we want this to be a replay of broadband where some have access and others wait until the very last moment and suffer accordingly? So what this bill does is it includes a number of provisions designed to smooth and speed the transition to electric vehicle deployment. And I'll just briefly run through what they are. There's a number of people here to speak about this bill. But the first thing is it puts the state's money where its mouth is and says the state should be buying electric vehicles and creates a preference that strengthens the existing preference, I should say, to ensure that the state is buying electric vehicles wherever possible. The second thing it does is it creates a rebate program for new, used, and leased electric vehicles in Minnesota, $2,500 rebate at the point of sale for new vehicles, $500 for used vehicles. Importantly, we don't want electric vehicles to just be available to wealthier people. For people who have a middle class or working class income, there is an extra $500 rebate on both ends there to make electric vehicles more affordable. And as I mentioned, those are at the point of sale. The bill also empowers our utilities, our investor-owned utilities, to utilize their incredible market power in order to help speed the transition by giving them new tools at the Public Utilities Commission in terms of the types of programming they can offer to help develop the infrastructure that will be necessary to support electric vehicles statewide. It also includes a couple of programs designed to help our auto dealers. And I think we'll hear from Amber Backus in a minute, but there's a number of transitions that will need to occur at our auto dealers in order to sell and service electric vehicles effectively. And we want to make sure that they have the resources to get that done. So that's kind of the bill at a macro level. There is an amendment, which I believe is posted. I won't move it since this is an informational hearing, but we've just spent some time over the interim looking at the technical language in the section related to the IOUs and the PUC and made some adjustments there. And when we do look at this bill on a more formal basis, I hope we'll consider the amendment at that time.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. We have five individuals who have asked to testify on the bill today, and I would ask that we keep testimony to 2 minutes each. We'll begin with Amber Backus from the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, I'm Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and its 350 franchise new car dealers, many of whom are family-owned businesses that have been serving their communities for decades. We support House File 1668, which includes grants to dealerships to offset the cost of becoming EV certified and consumer incentives to reduce the upfront cost of EVs. Combined, these initiatives will increase the number of EVs in the marketplace and spur demand. Dealerships can't just flip a switch and begin selling EVs. Most manufacturers require them to sign agreements and commit to making significant investments in their stores to be certified to sell electric vehicles. For the first generation EVs, such as a Chevy Volt, a dealer's cost to become EV certified were around $15,000 to $25,000. With bigger electric vehicles and higher capacity batteries coming, that number has increased tenfold for some makes, with those dealers required to make investments of $150,000 to $250,000 to install more expensive level three chargers and larger lifts. In an industry with historically low profit margins, dealers are only going to make this investment, one, if they have the resources, and two, are confident they can get a return on those investments. Section 7 of the bill establishes a program that will allow franchise dealers to apply for grants of up to $40,000 to help them purchase the infrastructure required by their manufacturers to become EV ready. These dollars will go a long way in alleviating some of a dealer's financial risk. Additionally, since dealerships are located on high traffic highway corridors in all corners of the state, more EV certified dealers means more access to public charging stations by the motoring public as they cross Minnesota. But the real game changer is Section 6 of the bill, which provides consumer rebates for purchase of electric vehicles. With EVs costing on average $12,000 more than the comparable conventional vehicle, the upfront costs of ownership are a deterrent. Research and the success of rebate programs in other states show that financial incentives drive EV adoption. The National Association of State Energy Officials has found that vehicle purchase programs are the most effective way to get more EVs on the road. And the experience of states with robust incentives to reduce the upfront costs of EVs has also borne this out. Vermont and New Jersey have been California's zero-emission vehicle, or ZEV states, for most of the past two decades. Their EV sales weren't increasing much until their legislatures recently enacted tax incentives for EV purchases. From 2018 to 2020, their EV sales increased two times as much as those in other ZEV states. EV incentives are also overwhelmingly supported by Minnesotans, more than 70% of both Democrats and Republicans, and can help drive demand for the market, bringing more EV options and leading to lower vehicle costs. For these reasons, we ask you to support the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. Next, we'll hear from John Reynolds with the National Federation of Independent Business.
Thank you, Chair Long and members. I'm John Reynolds, State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses in Minnesota. We're the state's largest small business organization with over 10,000 members, 75% of whom have fewer than 10 employees. NFIB Minnesota members are strongly opposed to several bills today that would increase energy costs for small businesses, whether through new assessments or increased RDA spending, to give out electric vehicle rebates and charging subsidies. Electric costs are a growing concern for small businesses. Since 2008, rates for all customer classes in Minnesota have increased significantly more than the national average. For most small businesses, rates have grown 12 times more than the U.S. average. On top of rising energy costs, small businesses are facing the worst inflation in 40 years, worker shortages, supply chain issues, and lost sales. Under Minnesota's regulatory compact, electric providers have exclusive service territories. In return, they're supposed to provide electricity at prices based on the actual cost of service. In this system, electric customers are not meant to be a piggy bank. They need the legislature and PUC to be gatekeepers for affordability. The legislature should not expand the role of regulated utilities outside the regulatory compact because their exclusivity, cost recovery, and government-guaranteed return gives them an anti-competitive edge over other private businesses. If publicly traded electric monopolies see this as a business opportunity and want to offer incentives for electric cars, electric boats, or electric planes, they can do so through an unregulated subsidiary. Private investment in innovation, not subsidies, will solve the biggest hurdles for EVs: shorter range, cold weather battery depletion, and long charging times compared to traditional vehicles. Lastly, NFIB is also concerned with Chair Long's proposal to force small businesses to set aside often limited parking spaces for EV charging spots. This will increase costs and is not reflective of market conditions. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Next, we'll hear from Deb Irwin with Xcel Energy. Is there one you might be on mute?
How's that?
Great.
Okay, sorry about that. Good morning. I'm Deb Irwin, Director of Policy and Program Planning for Clean Transportation at Xcel Energy. I'm honored to be here today to speak to the need for legislation that will establish a robust foundation for utility support of transportation electrification. Foundational legislation that sets forth the goals and requirements for utility transportation electrification plans is a best practice to support robust engagement from utilities, regulators, and all stakeholders through the regulatory process. Transportation electrification can save Minnesotans money and fuel costs while also providing environmental benefits, but there are significant barriers to customers making the transition to electric vehicles. Xcel Energy has to date received Public Utilities Commission approval of a variety of pilot programs to support our customers' transportation electrification needs, but we need to do more. A great example of the holistic approach that this legislation can bring to all Minnesotans is Xcel Energy's work supporting the EV Spot Network, a network of 70 public charging locations around the Twin Cities that is a collaboration between the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, the nonprofit car share organization, Our Car, and Xcel Energy. Our public charging pilot program is supporting the installation and reducing the costs of the infrastructure needed for the EV Spot Network, and the first chargers came online earlier this month. But this project just starts to scratch the surface of the benefits that utility transportation electrification plans can provide under a robust legislative framework. Xcel Energy looks forward to the opportunity to build upon our current educational and advisory services, infrastructure pilots, and managed charging pilots to accelerate transportation electrification and make these programs accessible to all customers. Additionally, coordinated planning through this legislative framework will help maximize the benefits of other state and federal programs, delivering more value for Minnesotans by having a clear process for public utility initiatives. Xcel Energy thanks you for your support of a strong role for utilities in delivering the benefits of transportation electrification to Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Irwin. Next, we'll hear from Isaac Orr with Center for the American Experiment.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Isaac Orr, and I'm a policy fellow specializing in energy and environmental policy at Center of the American Experiment. American Experiment fully supports the Minnesotans who want to purchase and drive electric vehicles. It's their right as an American to drive whatever vehicle they want. However, we strongly oppose measures that will force other Minnesotans to foot the bill for this decision. As a result, we have grave concerns about the public utility cost recovery measures and EV rebates in this legislation. Energy prices for electricity and home heating are already skyrocketing in Minnesota, and this legislation would force low and middle income Minnesota families to pay even higher electricity prices to subsidize the use of electric vehicles by their wealthier Minnesota counterparts. If Xcel wishes to build EV charging stations in Minnesota, they should form an unregulated subsidiary company and compete in the marketplace. They should not be allowed to recover costs and a government-approved profit on the backs of captive ratepayers. Shareholders should be exposed to the risk or reward of this venture, not electricity customers. Tesla didn't need a monopoly and government-approved profit to build EV charging stations, so why should Xcel? Furthermore, the cost of grid upgrades for EVs should be borne by EV purchasers and not the utility customers at large. The Boston Consulting Group recently found it would cost between $1,700 and $5,800 in grid upgrades per EV through 2030. Allowing utilities to rate-base these upgrades will lead to huge increases in electricity costs at a time when Xcel is already seeking to raise its prices by almost 22% over 3 years. We support EVs, but we firmly oppose trickle-down environmentalism. Thank you.
Thank you. And our last testifier is Mike Bull with the Minnesota Rural Electric Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Mike Bull. I'm the Director of Policy and Regulatory Affairs at the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. MREA is the statewide association representing the interests of all 50 of Minnesota's nonprofit rural electric cooperatives, which are owned by their members, governed by their members, and operate solely for the benefit of their members. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today in support of House File 1668. As I'm sure you know, Minnesota's electric co-ops are very supportive of beneficial use of electricity. Using electricity, whatever it saves our member consumers money, is more efficient and reduces emissions. That's why we fought so hard for the Energy Conservation and Optimization Act that Representative Stevenson authored. Now, for the first time, Minnesota's efficiency framework properly reflects the value of electricity relative to other fuels. Electric vehicles are a terrific example of beneficial electrification, and Minnesota's electric cooperatives are doing a number of things to ensure their members are ready for a more electric future. These include innovative programs to manage EV charging on the co-op distribution grids to help keep costs down, as well as improving the availability of public chargers in the Midwest through formation of a charging network among electric co-ops called Charge EV in partnership with our friends at Zeph Energy. Minnesota's electric cooperatives are also very excited about EV pickups that are coming to market soon that have been discussed here. Rural Minnesota, where electric co-ops provide service, is definitely pickup country. And then specifically with regard to Representative Stevenson's bill, we are especially interested in the provisions of the bill that Representative Stevenson worked out with the Minnesota auto dealers. We see the auto dealers as a vital partner for improving consumer understanding of EVs, and that's critical to increasing the penetration of EVs in the state. We think it's terrific that Representative Stevenson worked in collaboration with the auto dealers to include their idea on what's needed to help prepare their members to sell and maintain more electric vehicles, and we think that's a terrific approach. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. That's all I have, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bull. I do have just one brief question. Could you expand a little bit on your comment that electric vehicles can help keep costs down for electric consumers?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. Two things come to mind in response. One is the more, you know, rural electric cooperatives serve very few members per mile. It's like 7 members per mile relative to the IOUs that are probably 5 times that many members per mile. And you have to spread the fixed costs of operating utility over very few members. So we have to be very cost conscious. Selling more kilowatt hours helps to spread those kilowatt hours, those costs a little better, as well as we need to manage the charging of these vehicles as they're added to the grid so that they don't require significant investments in peak infrastructure. I think that's something that our co-ops are really aggressively wanting to avoid because those are costs that are directly imposed on the membership.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. Representative Swazinski.
So, Mr. Chair, so it sounds like the goal of this bill is to lower the cost by subsidizing it, not by actually finding ways to actually find things that are cheaper. What's the estimated cost? Like, let's say the electric vehicles being sold, Mr. Chair, or to any of the testifiers, would actually bear the cost of this infrastructure build out. What would be the increased cost per vehicle in the estimate, roughly estimated, rather than it subsidized by ratepayers and taxpayers?
Representative Stevenson, or you can redirect to a...
I'm not sure I follow Representative Swazinski's question, but I kind of quarrel with the premise of the question. I think what this bill is about is trying to speed the transition to electric vehicles that are already happening. It's not so much about subsidizing. It's about laying the same type of infrastructure we did when we transitioned from horse and carriage to internal combustion engine. Government has a role to play in doing that.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, it's my understanding that it would be multiple thousands upon thousands of dollars of increased cost per vehicle sold. So if these vehicles were to actually, you know, bear the brunt or bear the cost of what the cost of their refueling stations across the state and the rest. So the state needs to come in, you know, raise rates to ratepayers in order to pay for things like this. So I understand that. You know, one of the other questions and comments I have on this is, you know, if the California CARS rule was a shining light, this is the roadway to make sure it happens. And it's unfortunate that we have a Senate author that's a GOPer on this bill that is essentially going to lay the roadwork to have success for the California CAR rules. And I would just urge any Senate colleagues that are listening to this hearing that this bill is the foundation to make sure that California CAR rules work here in Minnesota. And if they support it, they just as well stop sending press releases out complaining about California CAR rules because they're laying out the red carpet for it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, I just want to respond to that very briefly and say that I think it's really unfortunate to hear a member of the legislature basically advocating that the state sabotage Minnesotans and impede their ability to participate in this new energy transformation because of a policy disagreement that he has with the governor. You know, I would like to think that we would all want Minnesota to be successful. And if we're going down a road that we should try and give Minnesotans the best opportunities they can rather than talking about trying to cut out the floor underneath a policy that you don't like.
Representative Grundegan.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for XL Energy testifier, if she's there. Just on that 22% rate increase XL asked for, can you give me a little bit of a breakdown of why it's that big of an increase request and how much of it is due to green new energy and EV upcoming requirements?
The EV portion of that question is within the scope of this hearing. I think beyond that, we don't have time for today. Ms. Irwin.
Thank you. I think that I can't speak to the pending rate case proceeding in front of the commission. I can say that we have approval for a number of programs that the commission and stakeholders have supported, and that the, you know, decision has been made. The cost recovery for those was appropriate, but I don't have the dollars off the top of my head for those.
Thank you, Ms. Irwin. Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Chair Long. So my question is for Mr. Bohl. What happens when fast charging ties into the peak demand, and what savings would that have once that happens?
Mr. Bohl.
Thank you for the question. I want to be clear about my answer. Is I think we want to make sure our co-ops are making sure that the charging of these vehicles are incented or managed in such a way as not to increase the investments in infrastructure. I think that's really important, Representative Mecklen. That's where significant costs can be driven by for the member owners of these co-ops. So that's a real point of interest and focus for the membership.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. Members, we have 10 minutes left, and I'm hoping we can at least get to a couple of these other bills since we have testifiers who have come today. So we'll be bringing this bill back before we take any official action on it. Next, we have House File 1853, which is Representative Bierman's bill, EV charging in Minnesota state parks. Representative Bierman, please describe your bill.
There we go. I got off mute now. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to all the testifiers today, all the great questions, and even better, some of the answers that came forth, shedding information on light on all the questions around EVs in our state. Thank you again, members, for the opportunity to review the bill on EV charging stations in our state parks as part of the broader look at the state of EV transportation transformation happening now. As the numbers of electric vehicles on Minnesota roads dramatically increase in the coming years, it is incumbent upon us to expand the availability of charging units everywhere people travel. We all know that most charging of your EV will be done at home, as much as 85% we heard today. The trepidation about range will be a roadblock for many consumers until they have confidence that the infrastructure exists further from home. Expanding our EV infrastructure and addressing range concern is fundamental to supporting Minnesota's transition away from fossil fuels and towards cleaner, renewable sources of energy in the transportation sector. We have heard today about the planning for this expansion from the Minnesota Department of Transportation and starting the expansion of our main transportation corridors, then focusing on areas of commerce, which makes sense. Many businesses have realized the importance and benefit of providing charging stations out front to lure customers to park and plug while they shop. Hotel chains are expanding this customer service to attract customers as well. But as we build out this charging infrastructure, we need to include greater Minnesota beyond the most traveled roads to the points of interest so popular for so many of us, our state parks, where we go to refresh and recharge our bodies and mind with clean air, clean environment, and some peace and quiet. Charging infrastructure will contribute to the effort of cleaner air and less emissions. Distance to the solitude will test the range of some of these EVs, so you'll need recharging at the park. Destination charging, pay-as-you-go charge arrangement will also benefit the DNR. The DNR has begun using some EVs and will need the stations for their own fleets as they transition. Installing charging stations is a very practical step that serves both the public and our agency in the state parks. This bill will utilize some RDA funds as intended to promote the startup, expansion, and attraction of renewable energy usage. The plan is for the DNR, in consultation with the MPCA and the Department of Commerce, to advise on preferred sites for the charging stations. Presently, there are very few charging points in our state park system. This bill seeks to address this issue and help align our infrastructure necessary to the needs of our citizens. I would like to share a message from a resident from Murray County. And they wrote that, "My entire county has only 8,000 people. We don't even have a stoplight. Forget about public transit or Uber, but we do have lakes and we have Shedick State Park. What that means is the number of people in my district at least doubles when we all thaw out and campers, fishermen, and snowbirds come around. In the summer, I see EVs from tourists. There's no charging infrastructure within 30 miles. It would be great to have EV charging stations at the state park. It appears only a few state parks up north already have stations. A similar arrangement for parks should be feasible as well. Creating a network of charging stations in rural Minnesota as state parks is only one area we need to focus on in greater Minnesota to connect our entire state. Expanding the EV charging network is a critical component to reducing greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota's transportation sector. Establishing a full network covering the state is fundamental for that success. State parks will be a great beginning. Now I'd like to hear I would like the committee to hear from the next testifier, please, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have one testifier to this bill, Mr. Phil Leversedge with Minnesota DNR. Welcome back to the committee.
Good morning, Chair Long and committee members. Thank you, Representative Bierman. My name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Parks and Trails in the DNR, and I'm glad to be here today to speak on behalf of Representative Bierman's bill. We've been working together with Representative Bierman over the past couple of years on this bill, and we are in support of it. Currently, there are four state parks that have Class 2 EV stations, two of them on the North Shore, Gooseberry Falls and Tetigouche, and then one in northwest Minnesota at Big Bog near Washkish. And just recently, we installed EV charging at Banning State Park near Sandstone. And we have had an EV charging station at Fort Snelling State Park for many years. Right now, the level of use is about moderate at the two North Shore parks and maybe on the low side of moderate use, but increasing each year at the other parks. This bill would help us expand EV charging station opportunities in 10 additional state parks that fall within XL Energy's service area, including Lake Chetek State Park in southwest Minnesota, as well as parks along the St. Croix River, and then a tier of parks just south of the Twin Cities metro area. So we look forward to working with Representative Bierman, this committee, and with MnDOT and other partners moving forward on the potential to expand EV charging opportunities across the state. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Leversedge. I don't see any hands, so Representative Bierman, why don't we jump to your next bill with our four remaining minutes, and you can tell us about your rest stop charging bill.
Sure. Our siting plans for charging stations in the rest areas is a work in progress. We've heard a lot about charging this morning from Mr. Sexton on the fast level three chargers being planned along the interstate, transportation hubs, commercial areas in crowded urban centers, and remote areas we talked about with my bill in the state and regional parks. County offices, we have a huge number of charging stations needed. The question is, where should they go, when, and how? So we want to fully expand and electrify the transportation sector so everyone can participate, that we need to fully support a charging system border to border. This means across the rural areas and in the less affluent urban areas too. Uniform distribution of charging throughout the state. The infrastructure needs to be built everywhere. People need to be educated about these vehicles, and increased demand throughout the state will follow faster. Presently, as noted by other presenters, various players are creating this electric vehicle charging system. Tesla is certainly leading the way nationwide and around the world. But electric utilities, private businesses seeking opportunity, local nonprofits, environmental organizations, retailers of all types, and state governments too, all role. One thing is for certain, even with all of these participants, even with the passage of the Biden infrastructure bill and the funding coming our way for charging infrastructure within it, we will need to do more to accelerate the electrification of the transportation grid and keep pace with the EVs arriving in the state. Rest areas, both on our freeways and trunk highways, are the logical first steps for charging infrastructure. They may be less lucrative for the—
Representative Bierman, we have 60 seconds left before we get cut off. Would you mind if I just jump to Mr. Rudin real quick?
Please.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Rudin with MnDOT, would you please care to finish off our committee and present 60 seconds of testimony on this bill?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rudin with MnDOT Government Affairs. I want to thank Representative Bierman for bringing this proposal forward. I would point out as well that we have House File 3220 that Representative Lippert has introduced, which does a little bit of the same thing in that it removes a current prohibition on commercial activities at rest areas so that we could allow a private company to come in and install a charging station at a rest area and charge a fee for providing that service. You heard earlier also about the federal funds coming our way. We do need some matching funds. And the $2 million in Representative Bierman's proposal happens to be just about the amount that we need for the current fiscal year to match the $10 million that's coming to Minnesota. So the governor also has a transportation funding proposal that would provide IIJA matching funds as well. And so look forward to working with you. Just one recommendation on the draft legislation. We would propose that it not be limited only to rest areas. There may be other areas along our interstate and other trunk highway corridors where it's appropriate to install a charging station. So that would be our only recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Rudin. Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Ball, I apologize we didn't get to your or my bills today, but we'll try to bring them back up for a hearing next week. Thank you, members, for a good discussion today, and we are adjourned so we can get to session.